At that point, it might seem the story of electricity is over. There are ancient charged electrons hidden inside all matter, and there are force fields that can separate out those charged electrons and make them move. But if that were all, today we would still be living in a world of grand Victorian technology. There would be elaborate light bulbs and telegraphs, and possibly even electrically powered horseless carriages. But that would be it. There would never have been radios or televisions or cell phones, no satellites beaming down GPS signals, no Wi-Fi or Bluetooth or any other wireless technology. Yet even in Thomson's mid-Victorian times, there was a hint that a further aspect of electricity existed. While the Great Atlantic Cable Lane was first underway, another friend of Thomson's, James Clerk Maxwell, had begun to look more closely into the fields that Thomson was trying to control. He was the young scientist to whom Faraday had written asking for help in 1857. He realized the fields had a complex inner structure and were actually made of two parts, an electric part and a magnetic part. His vision was extraordinary. Every electrically charged particle in the universe forms the center of a huge force field, he wrote. This electric field stretches outward like a streaming aura. We all carry these vast auras with us as we move. They travel in perfect pace with us. Normally, the positive and negative charges around us balance so that we don't see any effect. But if you scuff your feet on a rug and pick up an excess of negative electric charge from the electrons on the carpet, then the field emanating from you is denser, more intense. Lift your finger, and this slightly stronger field spreads outward, like the light from the Statue of Liberty's lamp. We can easily get static shocks, but there's also something more. Whenever you shake that charged-up finger, the effect is like shaking a big bowl of jello or jostling your hand in a pond of water. The streaming field that stretches from you begins to wobble. Now for the magical bit. If you take your jostling hand away from a real pond, then pretty soon the water's ripples die away. The wave you've created will stop. But Maxwell realized that there was also a magnetic part to Faraday's invisible force fields. As the electric part started rippling, it would power up the second, invisible magnetic part. Why? Because changing electric fields produce magnetic fields. It's what Joseph Henry had realized with his electromagnets. Switching on the electric current made the magnetic force appear. But what then happened as the magnetic part of the invisible field became stronger? Well, changes in magnetic fields will make a fresh electric field pop into existence. That was what Faraday himself had shown in the Great Basement Experiment in 1831. What it all means is that just by jostling an electric charge, you will make an electric field begin to sway. And when those first ripples die down, they will make a fresh magnetic field appear. As that magnetic part dies down in turn, the change in its intensity makes a fresh electric field appear. When that weakens, there's another magnetic field, and so on. It never ends. You have to pour in some energy at the start to get the initial electric charge to shake, but once you've done that, once you've made the first of these mutually connected fields start to wobble, you can walk away. Decades and millennia might pass. Our earthly existence might be totally forgotten, but the forward-stretching ripples you started in this combined electric plus magnetic force field will keep on traveling. It is immortal. The ripples are the magic carpets flying through the heavens. They weave a web across the sky. Thomson had missed it because he'd been confusing all this. He hadn't been able to see clearly the two separate parts and how they could create each other, phoenix-like, forever. But Maxwell had finally shown why Faraday's vision in his basement laboratory had been true. Maxwell wrote up his ideas in a number of intricate equations. But when he died, in 1879, although Thomson was a supporter, Maxwell's ideas were still taken by most scientists as just a hypothesis. Who could believe we live in a universe swarming with such invisible waves? It was accepted that a few soaring waves might leak out here or there from ordinary electrical wires. But no one was actually trying to reconfigure those wires so that they became dedicated launch platforms for these ripples in the electromagnetic field. No one, even as the 1880s began, was building a detector to monitor where they might be landing. And then, in 1887, someone did. The experimenter who accomplished this, Heinrich Hertz, left such a revealing diary that it's possible to present his work almost entirely through his own words, interwoven with the words of his contemporaries and immediate successors. It's to those first-hand accounts of the birth of our wireless world that we shall now turn.